So for the next 16 minutes or so, I'm going to hopefully convince you all that we need a new digital library concept in the U.S. in order to provide the literature needs for the epidemiologists and policymakers and other. How many of you in this audience have ever needed an article but you couldn't get it? This is good news for me to have justification that we're on the right track. I'd also like to acknowledge my co-presenters, Dr. Mike Landon, who's the state epidemiologist of New Mexico, and David Verbrugge, who is a chemist for the Alaska Department of Health. And these two reflect a very different perspective in terms of use of the digital library, but I wanted to acknowledge them. I don't know if David is here or not. David, thank you for coming. That's great. In this project, we looked at trends from the beginning. The project started about 7 years ago. We had some tests in the New England area. We looked at the changes taking place over time. And you can see on this slide that there are these five areas that we look at. How much does it cost to buy an article? How much does it cost to be to have access to library resources? What kind of staffing is in place and so forth? We also are very interested in visualization and connectivity. So you will hear me say that many of these resources are directly linked to other resources, so it saves you time and we hope effort and money. So the goals of the Digital Library Project are to identify and make seamlessly accessible, key piece, those trusted resources that are core useful and evidence-based to improve public health practice. We also wanted to sustain an existing library model, partial model, that utilized academic librarians who are in libraries that are part of the National Library of Medicine's outreach program. It's called the Regional Medical Library Program. So those two things were, very much a driving force for this project. And we also wanted to know how having access to the trusted literature could change the organization. Does it make it better? Does the public health department that has access to these resources improve their workflow, save time, money, and effort? So in order to do this, we came up with a very simple model. We have two major components to identify these trusted resources. One is to have a digital library on site that resides on the public health department intranet. Intranet, because we have to protect those subscribed resources. The other piece is to take advantage of this network that's already in place with a library partner so that those resources that you can't get direct access to quickly, you have a library partner that could supply those resources. And up to this point, the National Library of Medicine has been very much involved in supplying the funding for this project. That's going to change, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So the other piece is who's involved in this project, and I thought you'd like to see this slide. I think it's pretty impressive. Those blue highlighted states, including New Mexico, Tennessee, and the Multnomah County Department of Health, were just added in the past 6 months or so. And you also see on the right hand side of the slide, or the library partner side, you will see those libraries that are involved as partners in this project. So I hope that would give you a sense of who's involved. We have 21 public health departments, including two large county, Boston Public Health Commission and Multnomah County, involved in the project. So what are the development steps? Well, we have a number that are in place. We go to the public health department and meet with the leadership and team there to talk about the library, what the resources are, who can help us implement it on the site. And we ask them to complete an early survey. And in this early survey, there are questions such as, do you need access to the literature, and what does that access mean? In other words, what do you need the literature for? And we also have in place licensing from an enterprise approach. What that means is that these 21 public health departments do not have to negotiate individually with publishers. We do that in a central location, so that that also is a time-saving device. We have a number of publishers involved in this project. I think it's about 22 now, and they give us extremely low prices, pricing, in order to achieve access to the project, to the literature requests in the project. Now, that doesn't mean that they're just going to give these resources away, and that's the reason for having them accessible through the intranet as opposed to out on the web. Then the digital library is installed, and Vicky over here from New Mexico, if anybody wants to know how long it takes to get this done, she's a good person to ask. And we collect data on the use. So that all of this is done centrally, and that's where a lot of the time-saving pieces reside. We then follow up with a two-day training session. So we try to bring everybody up to speed, as many people as possible at one time, so that they have understanding and they can pass it along to their colleagues. And of course, we're very interested in evaluation and follow-up. Now, one of the things that's really, I think, very unique about this project is that not only do we promote the literature resources, but we promote national resources. So from your digital library page that resides on the intranet, you quickly can get to the CDC resources if you've done a search in PubMed or some other database, or you could go to the National Agricultural Library Information Centers, which there are six very interesting. One that I found very intriguing is the Water Quality Information Center. And so these are resources that supplement the e-journals and e-books that you will have access to. Also, we promote a number of National Library of Medicine databases. Does anyone have any idea how many databases the National Library of Medicine supports? A lot. It's something in the neighborhood of 350. And the one we all know is PubMed. How many of you have used PubMed in the last 2 months? In the last week? Okay, you're going to find this some information pretty interesting in a minute. So we basically concentrate on PubMed, but also the PubMed Central database is a whole database of freely available articles. So you want to know about that. And we found out that the labs and others really like the toxicology databases, so we promote those set of databases in the project. And of course, if you really want to know the terms and what the terms mean, the MeSH terms, we try to do a little segment on that as well, but we leave that up to individuals to learn about those databases. So I've got a few slides to show you what resources are in the collection. For example, we have a very nice ebook collection with 47 titles. And it's the vendor in this case is StatRef. And why did we choose them over Elsevier? They're a US-based company, and they will go to publishers for us and get the titles, the book titles that we would like to have in the collection. So that's one reason. So I put this slide up so that you could see that we basically took topics in public health and looked at all the resources in their collection to identify those that are more, would be more likely to be useful to public health. So currently, this is the list of resources that are contained in the digital library. We have more than 230 e-journals. We have a number of databases. We subscribe for those persons involved in the project to Global Health. It's a companion database to PubMed because it has more of a global nature. We also, because we push systematic reviews so that you better understand the literature from that perspective, the Cochrane Library, there are 7 different databases in the Cochrane Library, including systematic reviews. And one of our more popular resources, as David can attest, is the CLSI standards. The first year, they were just used off the chart. They sort of leveled off now, but they are most, well, they're most interesting to labs. Others in the public health workforce use them as well. We have about 48 ebooks in the collection, and I think, and tools. Along with the ebooks and StatRef, you have tools that include the ICD-9 and 10 with a crossover so that you can go from one to the other. Now, why else would you want this in one central place? Mainly directors of public health love this because they don't have to buy as many subscriptions to ICD-9 and 10. So we're constantly improving the number of simultaneous users in order to accommodate all the public health departments in the project. The other piece is there are tools such as MedCalc, and we asked StatRef to go to IOM for us, Institute of Medicine, and we now have 15 full-text Institute of Medicine reports. And you may say to me, well, I can just go to the IOM site and download. The question is, do you want to download the whole report? Or do you want to be able to search it with a chapter in a book or an article in a journal? So that's the difference in having that integrated approach to information delivery. We also negotiated with Thomson Reuters to get a fabulous amount for EndNote. Anybody use EndNote in here? Okay. I probably shouldn't be advertising this, but for this project, they gave us a price of about $60 a person. If you go to the web and look it up at their site, you will see that it's very expensive. This slide basically shows you the access to the literature by labs, how they use labs. We have laboratory-specific journals. We have a library partnership in Alaska's case with the University of Alaska at Anchorage, and that library supplies articles that are not directly accessible through the digital library site. I also thought it was interesting that StatRef with the ebook collection was of interest to the labs as well. And I like the time-sensitive nature of having toxicology information readily accessible. This is what the CLSI standards website looks like, and the reason I put this up, it's very new. And so if you have seen it before, has anybody in here ever looked at the CLSI standards? Okay. You'll notice it has a different view. And how we handle that with CLSI, because you can't do a ubiquitous pass-through with them. You have to have a name and password. So they've come up with a really neat, generic way for public health departments. It's a three-letter, three-number, and we can actually build that into the system so that you don't have to put name and password. All we do need to do is find that savvy IT person to help us do it, and the CLSI will allow it. But notice that these guidelines are not only used by our labs a lot, but they are now being used by others in public health to support their work. So I want to talk to you a little bit about what we've learned about public health departments and early data collected. We had a number of people, in this case I just took a couple of samples from different public health departments to look at the barriers limiting access, and you can see I don't have time, I don't have time to read, I don't have access to the journals, and other. And we also found some interesting information in terms of when was the last time that you had access to training, or when was the last time you were trained on how to use library resources. And you can see that in this case, at this public health department, 29% said they were a pro at searching the literature, but 70% said they hadn't had courses recently and didn't know how to effectively search the literature. So I took another couple of public health department samples just to illustrate that I have not been used to train, I have not been trained to use electronic resources, and that both of those blue arrows point to that data. So you can see that we are at least learning that this is an area which we need to spend more attention, try to get more online training, webinars, and we still believe that one on-site training to bring everybody, as many people up to one level, is a rational thing to do. Now, one of the other questions that we ask in this survey is, for what purpose do you need access to the journals or other trusted literature? And you can see along the bottom of this slide all the different applications. And then we give them the option for other. And in one of the latest public health departments added to the study, you can see the other uses listed here. And so that carries out, and we can add those topics in for the next group so that we can constantly monitor the interest in topic with the relative access to the literature. I thought you'd like to see the cost-effective piece of this project. We currently subscribe to 21 Oxford University Press titles. However, OUP also provides access, because we have a license, to other resources, and that leads into improving the collection over time, because we've identified journals and other kinds of resources through that open access. But the most important piece about this slide is that the cost of the license for all public health departments is about $24,700, or per public health department about $1,376, and the cost per use is not the $35 that you would have to pay on the web, but the $1.46 is the cost per use of these resources. Wiley titles, I don't know how many are familiar with these titles, but the same kind of phenomena exists. We pay about $16,000 for the whole collection. This year, we went from 15 titles up to, I think, 30, maybe, titles of Wiley. And the cost per use is $3.86. Am I convincing you that this is a good way to go for public health? Okay. I did a little study related to health affairs. Now, those in public health leadership like this project because, again, they don't have to necessarily buy multiple copies of the journal. So this shows you, with 10 public health departments, the cost year over year for 4 years of health affairs. And I can tell you that the cost per use is less than $5. So that gives you some sense of continuum, related to the price of the journal, the resources. I thought you might like to see what a digital library looks like. Remember, they set on the intranet, and so we can't, unless we had a name and password, we couldn't demonstrate that for you at this point, but we do demonstrations occasionally when requested by public health departments. So you see the view of the Indiana Digital Library and what Indiana says. These are actual testimonials from Indiana on how they use the digital library to reaffirm recommendations, gather information on harmful algae blooms, and so forth. These are their words that came from the Department of Health. Here is a view of the Tennessee Department of Health, and you see the view of the digital library and how they see the value of this library. We just asked the team lead to supply 4 or 5 topics so that we could use this to illustrate. Now, how many of you have an intranet how many of you use SharePoint? Okay. I just wanted you to see that this is a SharePoint digital library-based product, and it is doable. And here's New Mexico, and I think New Mexico's is one of the more colorful ones. We're not surprised, right? But on the left-hand side, you see a view of the digital library, and then you see from actual users how they view the value of the digital library. Now, what does all this mean? It means you can go to PubMed and you can do a search on Zika or any other information topic that you're interested in, and you will get a retrieval. And if we have the title in subscription, you will see your own link out button there. And you can see New Mexico's and Tennessee's, and when you click on that link out button, the full text pops up. So it's much the same as your academic career, however, it's more easily accessible because it's at the desktop in your office. The other piece you can do is you can sign up through the individual journals or through StatRef for the IOM reports. Through most of the resources, through PubMed, you can sign up for news alerts systematic review alerts. And when you get the email, in this case it's Health Affairs, you can click on the title of the article you want and it passes you through because it recognizes your IP address. So there are two things. The digital library has to sit on your intranet to protect the publishers, and we have to give the publishers your IP ranges so that it allows that seamless pass-through. So future enhancements. We want to add new states. We'd like to be at 50 states. We would like to improve our communication plan and create active newsletters every month. And in fact, Vicki brought some copies of her newsletter from New Mexico, and I'll leave them up here so you could pick them up and take a look at what a digital library newsletter looks like. We would like to enhance and embellish the educational plan so that beyond the two-segment training on site, you would have access to a number of webinars and YouTubes and other kinds of training on specific topics. We know, for example, after teaching EndNote, that people want a lot of follow-up in how to use EndNote. And then we're working on the next generation technical plan because we know that seamless access. For example, when you search on an infectious disease, for example, in StatRef, you can go directly to the MMWR or some other database that they have direct connectivity. So that seamless electronic access is very critical in terms of saving time and getting your work done efficiently. And then we would like to look at the data in various ways. We need the epidemiologists in this room to help us look at this data, I can see. And then we will be able to further expand the project and educate various persons as to how this project could be helpful downstream for all public health departments. Well, so we just finished evaluating 3 public health departments after 1 year in the project, and I thought you'd like to see some of the comments that people made This just happened in May, so it's very new information. You can see, all the different pieces of information. For example, my research is now more comprehensive. So I just wanted to, put that up for you to look at. And so I'm back to my original point. Why an enterprise library for public health, and is it cost effective? Resources are quickly available to support your work. We've talked about the cost efficiencies. Having a central staff be able to negotiate and pass this information along quickly has been very, not only intuitive, but timely. We know that price redundancies are eliminated. Having visited all of the public health departments in this project, I can tell you that they all were paying different prices for the resources that they were purchasing. And in this case, this, levels the playing field so that the cost is more efficient. We also continue to collect data not only on individual journal use, but on the whole package and the cost per use per public health department and per item, per article. We've done some benchmarking initiatives with CDC, for example's library, so that we know the top used Wiley journals in CDC and we know the top used Wiley journals in the public health department. And then we also have a methodology in place to consider individual public health department requests. So if we don't have this article readily available through the digital library, we can get access through the library partner, and then we have a third way. We have a group of libraries who will fill for us as long as it doesn't compete with a copyright law. So the next steps, the fee structure basically costs are covered by licensed resource budget. There are some additional funding opportunities. For example, we've been working with CDC to make funding available for the digital library through the CDC block grant. How many in here have block grants? Prevention got block grants? Okay. And the University of Massachusetts, from which this project was created and extends from UMass, they have recently been awarded a center for public health by the National Library of Medicine, and they will be hiring new staff to manage this center, and the hope is that we can grow this project to all 50 states and some local health as well. The person to contact, I'm happy to give you my card and follow up in any way I can, but we have a new central manager at UMass. His name is Javier Crespo, and this link goes directly to him, and you could ask him any questions about funding, because we are looking at possible ways to continue this project. Any questions?
Mm-hmm. So, is there a way for us to actually get access to that library?
Probably not at this point, but we are considering, for example, Tennessee is almost a statewide scenario. In other words, we're testing in three of their counties. And yes, we do have to have separate IP addresses because those IP addresses are not managed by the state, nor do they want to manage. On the other hand, it is working. So the idea is if we can keep them going for a year, then we'll know that that's a reasonable way. So my suggestion is if you have a county, one of the things I didn't mention, we base pricing on 10% of the FTE level. So if you have 1,000 FTE in your public health department, we would originally base the pricing on 10% of that, or 100. And we also know that it costs about $269 per person. You know, now this isn't flat across. I mean, we use that number, but Maryland, for example, is a little higher level than, you know, one of the other smaller states, like Rhode Island, for example. But so that's how the pricing is based. So we'd have to have two things. We'd have to have an IP, your IPs for your group, and we would have to know the FTE level, and then we would base the cost on that calculation.
Mm-hmm.
No, and it isn't a database, and it isn't really an application. What would you call it, Vicki?
Well, nothing resides on the internet.
You
actually go directly to the journal.
So it's a gateway.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And
then secondly, the pricing, is that all
annual?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Do you have any state libraries in the collaborative currently, or are they all academic libraries?
We do have state library. We have Alaska State Library is involved. And I'm glad you asked that question, because they were subscribing to some of the same titles. So we contacted the vendors and said, you can't charge us twice for that. I mean, you know, we made a case for having a more ubiquitous price. And the state library gave us their list of 11 titles, 10, whatever it was, and we were able to move that right into the digital library so you could get access very quickly. So that's the only state library that has been involved, and most of the state libraries do not have journal collections, for example, to support public health. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Our state library has some, you know, public.
Perfect.
If I wanted to encourage them to reach out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great.
I need to give you my card and let me know. We want to enrich that library partnership, because we feel we don't want every one of our libraries in the U.S. to go away. We're just trying to get libraries designed that accommodate public health initiatives. So that's where we're coming from. Any other questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, let's express our appreciation to Karen and the